Justice Hardesty, members of the court. I'm John Schlegelmilch, for the record. I'm here representing Mahuba Mining, Limited in this matter before the court. As a place of beginning, in 1872, our United States Congress passed the mining laws in relation to this country. Those mining laws relating to federal public lands have changed slightly over the years, but are basically intact from the time that they were adopted in 1872. Specifically, we're here relating to the laws dealing with unpatented lode mining claims. At the time that Congress adopted the mining law, they left it up to the states, including the state of Nevada, to adopt laws relating to the possession and title of mining claims. There were just some minor things that needed to be accomplished in order to record those claims with the federal government. But title itself and possession of those claims were left as matters of state law. Nevada's Mining Act was originally adopted in 1897.
Could you, before you get into the application of state law on title claims, address the question of whether this matter is now moot because of the federal withdrawal, so to speak, for absence of payment of fees? I have two questions, and I know my colleagues do too, have others. But the first question is how, even if you were to prevail, how is this not moot because of your the loss of your rights to the BLM? And secondly, maybe you could expand on how this would work. It's just not clear. I think we need to address the mootness question first.
Sure. Well, initially, Your Honor, I do not believe that this matter is moot, and I believe that redress could occur in this particular case because it's between primary title between Mahuba Mining and Nevada Copper. It's like any quiet title action in the state of Nevada. In the event that the district court quiets title in favor of a party, the other party gets no interest in the property. In the event that this court were to find superior title on behalf of Mahuba Mining, in that event, they would have superior title over Nevada Copper. The fact that the claims were not paid for, maintained, there was no claims to maintain according to our district court. They were voided by the district court. The final order of the district court was clear that there were no claims in existence. If there's no claims in existence, how do you maintain those claims with the BLM? Because there's two private interests involved in this particular case, Your Honor, the court's deciding who, as between themselves, have proper title to those mining claims. Those claims are being preserved. They're not open and unclaimed federal land. The district court gave those claims to Nevada Copper pursuant to their order. Mahuba's interest in those claims is primary, so what would basically have to happen, Your Honor, is that those claims would be, in the event that this court found in favor, those claims would be refiled because they are being preserved. It's not open land. If it was open land, I would agree with you. If there was double forfeiture on this particular land, yes, because then nobody would have any interest in this land at all.
But Mahuba's interest lapse.
Mahuba's interest didn't actually lapse in the land. The district court voided their interest in the land so that the district court found that there was no claim surviving, that there was no claim in the initial. So the BLM requirement, Your Honor, only gets there once title is decided in the state of Nevada, who has primary possessory right. Here,
it sounds like if the court were to resolve the quiet title issue as between your client and Nevada Copper in your favor, you would seek to, maybe this isn't a great term, but piggyback on Nevada Copper's preservation of the BLM authority to utilize these rights. Is that what you're saying?
Well, yes, Your Honor. The claims are being preserved under the Nevada Copper, under the PMK claims that the court found.
Yes, mechanically, and maybe this doesn't make it different. I just don't see how Mahuba gets BLM to transfer what Nevada Copper's been paying to them to you guys. But anyway, maybe that's not, I'm not sure that that's essential to the legal outcome here, but it, mechanically it seems odd.
And if the court quieted title in my client's favor, that would be basically the outcome. My client would take over those claims as they exist.
Mm-hmm. And they get the benefit of payments or fees that have been paid by Nevada Copper.
In preservation, well, they're the ones that were told by the district court own those claims at this point.
Mm-hmm.
And it's actually, you can't hold a claim on top of a claim. And if you look back at Belk v. United States, it's impossible to do it. So you can't have one claim. Once you perfect that claim, you can't hold another claim over that claim. It's void, period.
What do you mean perfect the claim? I don't see these claims as ever being perfected, per se.
There are a number of claims perfected, and there's a time continuum in this particular case, Justice Perry. Initially, and if we can get in that, there's a stark difference in the law between filing a notice of vacation and a claim, okay? They're two separate legal things. A location or filing a notice of vacation and monumenting it does not create a claim. It creates an interest. And Mashpee McNamara is almost exactly on point in this particular item.
But it requires certain steps to be taken before you can perfect.
Before you can perfect.
Right.
Yes. When we were talking about this particular case, Your Honor, while that ground is still unperfected, and I think this is a very significant distinction in this case, while that ground is still unperfected ground, it is still open, it is still considered open ground. Therefore, anybody can come in and file another notice. In this particular case, Mahuba filed their notice April 3rd, 2006. Pumpkin Copper at the time, now Nevada Copper, filed their notice of vacation only over a portion of the tri-claims on April 4th, 2006. That was uncontested during the trial in this matter. In fact, Greg French, the engineer geologist from Nevada Copper, testified that he actually physically saw the April 3rd notices of vacation posted on the claims that they were overstaking on that particular day, on April 4th, when they put their location monuments in. What that does, Your Honor, it's still open ground. The notice of vacation does not take that out of the public domain. What that does, though, is give the senior locator, the right to perfect that claim. The right to perfect that claim under Nevada law. And how do you do that under Nevada law? You have to stake the boundaries. You have to record the map. You have to record a certificate of location, all that which needs to be done in a certain period of time. If you fail to do that, you do not perfect that claim. So you don't have a claim. There's no claim. Once you perfect the claim, it reverts back to the day of the notice of location. Mashpee McNamara specifically found in that particular case the same thing. Back then, in 1908, the requirements were slightly different. All you needed to do is put a monument up and you needed to actually stake your boundaries, and then you would perfect your claim. What they found in Nashville McNamara was that there was a question of fact and a question of law, that in that particular case, whether that land was actually held under another claim. Because if it is, then you can't stake on top of it. Nashville McNamara stood for the same thing. If it's a claim that's been taken out of the public, then you can't file your notice on top of it. So that it stood for that. And locations are different than claims. NRS 517.080 deals with abandoning claims. There was no claim at the time of the new notice of location. There was only a notice of location in a location. The statute specifically provides the relocation of abandoned load claim. And since there was no load claim at the time, there was just that location lapsed, the particular claim wasn't perfected, and a new notice of location created the new interest to eventual perfection. If that's the case, there's nothing in Nevada that prevents multiple. There's no laws, unlike Arizona, where there is a specific law that says if you locate a claim and don't perfect it, you can't relocate the same claim. You can't locate it again for 180 days, I believe it is. So Nevada doesn't have a similar law. And if I may, I would like to reserve the remainder of my time for rebuttal.
Yes, sir, Mr.
Sanders.
Good morning, Mr. Irwin.
Good morning, Your Honors. Thomas Irwin for the firm Irwin & Thompson, in Nevada, appearing on behalf of Nevada Copper Inc. Further, I'll address the issues you raised during Mr. Sodermuth's argument, and I want to correct a few assertions of the law, particularly Nash v. McNamara. If you read Nash v. McNamara on page 142 to 143, it states very clearly, when a claimant enters on the land, constructs a monument location, posts a notice of location, and marks the boundaries by posting the claim names, he has segregated those lands from entry and appropriation by any other party. That is the law in all of the states. That is the understanding of all mining law scholars, Lindley, Costigan, the rest of them, and that is the understanding of mining lawyers today, and that is the practice. In fact, in Nash v. McNamara, this court held that a party who does those acts during the 90-day period allowed for completion of discovery work can commence and recover damages for trespass if another party enters during that period. That demonstrates very clearly that a location, a mining claim exists, because without a mining claim, without a location, a party would have no rights whatever. The concept that failure to perfect makes the claim void ab initio is contrary to the majority opinion in Nash v. McNamara. The portions of Nash v. McNamara cited by appellants in the reply brief come from Justice Norcross's concurring opinion. And that opinion was directly at odds with the majority opinion in Nash v. McNamara. It also is directly at odds with the provisions of the federal statutes, the Federal Land Policy and Management Act, FLTMA, 43 U.S.C. section 1744, which expressly provides that the owner of a mining claim, and that's the term used in this federal statute, which governs this case, is preemptive of the Nevada statutes, and is a supreme law of land under the Supremacy Clause. That statute states that the owner of an untitled mining claim who does not file his claim documents with the BLM within 90 days after the date of location is deemed to have conclusively abandoned its claim, forfeited. In other words, give up.
There's no intent element there at all as far as abandonment is concerned. Normally an abandonment requires examination of intent.
Of intent?
Yes.
That's true in the common law, but Your Honor, I would direct you to footnote 15 of U.S. v. Locke, where Justice Marshall stated, common law principles, however, do not entitle an individual to retain his property until the common law would recognize it as abandoned. Legislatures can enact substantive rules of law that treat property as forfeited under conditions that the common law would not consider sufficient to indicate abandonment. And the court there stated that the Congress created this minimal burden and altered the common law principles. So you can't substitute common law state property law principles for the express provisions of FLIPA. In any event, the location initiated by the original tribe claims was a location, it was a mining claim, as clearly contemplated under FLIPA because it refers to a mining claim, it refers to rights. And the forfeiture occurs at the expiration of the original 90 days. It doesn't occur on the date of location. During those 90 days, the claim locator has a bundle of property rights, including, as Nash states, the right to sue trespassers. You have the right to mine the property. You have the right to sell the property. All of those rights are pertinent to location from the initial date of location. And under the decisions of the Supreme Court in Colby, Ralph, and others, the locator of the claim who posts notice marks the boundaries has rights of post possessio, which grant exclusive right to the property during which the locator pursues the making of a discovery of valuable minerals, the locator of the owner of the mining law. So it is a property right, it is a location. And in this case, this Nevada statute for the posting of monuments applies. There are three things required for application of the statute: a prior location, an abandonment, and the physical acts of relocation. The first occurred when the Ojibwa located its original tribe claims. It posted a monument location with a notice of location. It constructed its corner monuments. It had a prior location. It then abandoned them, as a matter of fact, when it voluntarily and intentionally relinquished the rights under the original claim and the serial of the locations by replacing the notice of location and claiming new rights in a new location. That was an abandonment as a matter of intent. And Mr. Adrian, the Jewish geologist and claim staker, testified to that. It was intentional.
But these mostly reposted within the 90-day period, though?
Yes.
Yes.
So they replaced what they had.
You call that rolling.
Rolling, that's right, rolling paper. They replaced what they had. They gave up those rights intentionally to try to get rights with a more recent location date in order to defeat the requirements of FLIPA for filing location documents and payment of the federal fees and the state and county fees. So they had an abandonment by virtue of that act, but they also had an abandonment by virtue of FLIPA. They didn't file with BLM, and the statute says you forfeit, you give up, you lose your rights by virtue of that failure. And then they did complete the physical acts of attempting to relocate the claim. So all three elements of the statute are there. They were required to put a new mining location out there. Now, we can question the sensibility of this statute in modern times, but the plain fact is the legislature of Nevada concluded an old post gives the same notice as a new post. They concluded that when they said a new locator can use the corner monuments. And the corner monuments are physically the same type of monument required for a mining location. The legislature said that satisfies the on-the-ground notice requirement. But the legislature also required an additional minimal act to demonstrate the relocator's intent. A new monument. You can't reuse and renew.
Now, well, the language of the statute, we're talking about 517.080, you erect new boundaries or you adopt old boundaries by renewing the monuments if they've been removed or destroyed.
I think that's a reference to the marking of boundaries is done by the claimant, Your Honor, not by the monument location. The monument location is placed in the interior of the claim, in the center.
Okay.
The boundaries are marked by the corner monuments. In a current law, those must be posted, those must be marked and constructed.
That's a separate consideration.
Right. They're separate from the monument location. So you have four corner monuments, you have one location monument in the center where you post your notice. They're different.
Okay.
But the statute clearly contemplates that corner monuments that are old, that can be renewed and reused, give the same notice as if you put a new monument up, but the statute doesn't require that. It doesn't allow that for the monument location. And Merely posting a new piece of paper doesn't make a piece of wood a new post. A piece of paper is not a post, plain and simple. And I don't think it's the court's province to essentially negate the legislative intent. They wanted to see a demonstration of some additional act, whether it was to show a fresh level of activity in the claim, or just as a minimum burden to be borne by a relocator. That's what the legislature required. And I don't think substantial compliance based on the fact you can see the old post overcomes the requirement for a new monument. The other elements at play here is that in addition to intentionally not complying with 517.080, Majuba engaged in a scheme which was intended to avoid payment of the federal filing and claim maintenance fees and to avoid the payment of the state and county recording fees and state and county annual mining claim maintenance fees. Each claimant is required under Nevada law on the 4th of November each year to record a notice of intent to hold, and the county recorder assesses mining claim fees that go to the county and to the state. And if you read the federal mining law, 30 U.S.C. 28I, it says the holder of every mining claim shall pay the fees on or before September 1. It says the holder. And they held these fees too. They held these claims or attempted to after September 1. They didn't pay the fees, but the statute says they do, and they were required to do that. They didn't file their papers because they didn't want to submit themselves to BLM's jurisdiction and liability for forfeiture of their claims by non-payment. But after this lawsuit was concluded in the district court, September 1, 2011, they did not pay their fees. Those claims became forfeited and void as a matter of law. This statute is self-operative. No notice, no grace.
But also, arguing the claims were forfeited or abandoned, there were no fees payable.
Pardon me?
They maintained that there were no fees payable then, that they were responsible for if the claim had been abandoned or forfeited.
I understand, Your Honor, but when they filed with BLM, they subjected themselves to the money law fee payment requirements. They had those last existing set of tri-claims on which they based their counterclaim. They filed those documents with BLM. They were required to pay the fees September 1, 2011. They paid them the year before and the year before that.
Your position, Mr. Newman, is notwithstanding the district court's order that they, their rights to the claims were voided, they should have still paid the fees to preserve their rights going forward.
That's right, Your Honor. We need to make clear that the obligation to pay these fees is annual, it's ongoing. Mm-hmm. And they subjected themselves to their obligation when they finally recorded the location documents for the claims on which they based their counterclaim. They continued to maintain those claims for a few years, but then they did it in 2011, and as a matter of law, those claims became void. They have no mining claims to which title can be quieted. And the argument that the Nevada Copper PMK claims preserved the land or preserved the claims is really nonsensical, because from the beginning of this lawsuit, when they filed their counterclaim to the final of their reply brief, their claim is that the PMK claims are void. And in order for this court or the district court to find that their tri-claims are superior title, the court must find that the PMK claims themselves are void. That is a predicate for their prevailing in the case. So if the PMK claims are void, how can they possibly be preserving the land? If the PMK claims are void as they contend, they carry no rights to the federal land. They cannot be preserving any rights out there on behalf of them. And the other element of this is, in the counterclaim and the pleadings and papers filed in the court, we have never contended that the PMK claims were theirs, were owned by them, or required to be conveyed to them. It's completely contrary to their contention that those claims were void and a nullity. And now on appeal, they are contending that Nevada Copper is holding those claims, in essence, in constructive trust for them. It was never pleaded. It's an equitable claim for relief that was never pleaded in. Frankly, in light of their bad faith as found by the district court, I don't think equitable principles would allow the award of those claims to them. There are some other problems with that, just practically speaking. Number one, without a copier, paid for the cost of locating those claims and their maintenance these past 7 years. Not all of the PMK claims are within the boundaries of the Majuba claims. Some of them, parts of some of them are outside. So to award title to these PMK claims to Majuba would be contrary to equitable principles, would be contrary to, it would just be improper because not all of the claims are inside the boundaries of where the tribe claims.
Mr. Irwin, returning to the discussion you had earlier with Justice Perrieri, dealing with the interpretation of 517.080, there seem to be some treatises that would permit the use of old monuments in order to preserve one's rights under that statute. How does this court and this panel, if it reaches that issue, reconcile some of the observations made in those treatises versus the express language in our statute?
Well, I think those treatises and those cases that deal with substantial compliance when it comes to implementation, they aren't dealing with cases based on statutes with this specific requirement. And the statute is unique. I think there are only two or three other states that have this requirement for a specific additional new physical monument. And that's limited to the monument location in those statutes and not the corners. And there's just a distinction in this statute.
I meant to look, how long has it been since our legislature visited 517.0801?
I don't think that my recollection is, Your Honor, they haven't altered that except perhaps one time they made a minor change that didn't deal with the requirement for the monument location, but the state legislature has, since 1972, considered and altered the requirements for monumentation generally and the types of monuments on at least three or four occasions. They allowed smaller, thinner posts instead of 4x4 versus 2x2. They prohibited the use of perforated PVC pipe to prevent damage to wildlife. So they did
that. But in that process, they never amended this sentence, the last sentence in the subparagraph 1.
They left that one intact, yes, Your Honor.
All right. Do my colleagues have any other questions for Mr. Irwin?
No.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Irwin, for your arguments this morning. Thank you, anyone else? We have about a little over 3 minutes.
It appears like the last set of amendments in relation to the location statute itself, Your Honor, was 1985.
Okay. But not dealing with this statute?
No.
Okay.
Just real briefly, Your Honor, what we're talking about here, and Mr. Irwin continues to talk about the Federal Land Policies and Management Act. As opposed to the mining laws of 1872, which control as to who actually has title. If you look at 30 U.S.C., Your Honor, and specifically 30 U.S.C. 28I, it specifies that it's a forfeiture and that any claim is deemed null and void by operation of law. It says nowhere in there that it's an abandonment in the mining law itself. So the Federal Land Policies and Management Act deals mainly with your subsistence of mining claims and payments to the federal government. That's what it deals with. Now, in the Locke case, yes, they found that it was a forfeiture. U.S. v. Locke, they found it was a forfeiture, and that particular party, Locke, lost his claim as a result of the forfeiture.
What I'm struggling with is just conceptually. And as Judge Huff indicated in his order, it seems evasive of federal and state law by recording these claims and not paying the mandated fees, and that Majuba attempted to enjoy the exclusiveness of the claims without paying the monies owed, and he indicated the law wasn't intended to be so manipulated. And it makes sense to me. Why can't this go on indefinitely, just roll the claims, roll them until somebody finally calls you? When would you ever be required to pay the fees?
Sorry, Your Honor.
When would you ever be required to pay the fees if this were contemplated by the law?
There is a long body of law in relation to intervening rights, and it relates to whether or not the mining laws are mandatory on miners. Specifically, Your Honor, I referenced in my brief Harvey v. Havner, which was pretty on point in this. A miner is not mandated to comply with the law until an intervener comes in. And specifically, it says the acts may be performed, the period of time prescribed within these acts may be performed, shall not be deemed mandatory if it is performed before the rights of third parties have intervened. Here, Your Honor, prior to third party, my client filed a notice of revocation on April 3rd. Third party intervened April 4th. My client perfected his claim at that point. He was required to proceed. If my client does not proceed, then Nevada Copper has the superior right. If he doesn't record his claims and perfect those claims, then so until there's an intervener, the mining laws, and there's a body of law on this, it is not a mandatory action.
So through rolling, your client gets the benefit of April 3rd in perpetuity?
Yes, my client would get the benefit of April 3rd
in
for the
perpetuity
of recording.
In the process of rolling?
Yes. But if you listen to what Mr. Irwin says, if they actually technically reclaim it or relocate it, or if it's null, or even if they purposely abandon the location, they put that new notice on there, well, it's a new claim. It's a new location.
But doesn't the statute require a new monument?
The statute requires, but
and
it's not a claim. It's just a location. It's a right to make that perfected claim. It's not a claim itself at that point. Now, Mr. Irwin says that I'm wrong on that point, but I would submit to the court his own case of Emerson v. Aiken that he relies on for part of this, of 26 Colorado App, I believe it's 481, or 140 Pacific 481, Your Honor, a 1914 case, specifically says that until the claim is perfected, it is open ground and anyone can claim notice and location on it. And that if it's not perfected, it doesn't become a claim. Same thing with Belk v. United States. Same thing with Nash v. McNamara. Apparently we read that case significantly different because in the body of the case, as written, they say if Portland notices were so posted and the claims were not staked in monumental, i.e. perfected at that time, which was the only requirement to perfect at that time. In Nevada now, we have two additional requirements to perfect. We have to record a map, and we have to record a certificate of location. Before that, you have nothing to file with BLM because you don't have a claim, a title claim under Nevada law.
Okay, Mr. Sagamos, thank you. I think we understand your position and that of Mr. Irwin's. We thank you both for your excellent arguments and briefs in this case. Not something one sees every day. Always fun to talk about locators and mines. Thank you very much for your presentation.